Star jump sequence terminates, Captain.
Get the gravitational dampers online and open the blast shield.
Aye, sir.
Bring us in closer.
Aye, aye, sir. Moving us in on sublight drive.
Extreme magnification.
Aye, sir.
The center of the galaxy. And there's our black hole.
The experience of a lifetime, Captain.
Let me put this on audio. You should be able to hear the magnetic resonance.
This is it, ladies and gentlemen. The edge of time and space, where the impossible can happen. Welcome to the event horizon.
Good morning, or afternoon, or evening, whatever is relevant for the part of the world you are in. Indeed, welcome to the Event Horizon, where the impossible happens. Join us each week at this time as we delve into the worlds of science fiction, fantasy, and science fact in all their forms. I am your host, Gene Turnbow.
And I am your other host, Susan Fox.
And with us is the key guy behind Mana Comics. Welcome to the show, Chris Caravallo.
Aloha!
We are in Hawaii.
Yeah, Gene and Susan, it's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for the invite.
I finally got through the intro. You know, what? For the listeners, you're lucky you don't have to listen to the 4 or 5 takes it took us to get here.
So in our hearts, we are on vacation. We are having a tropical vacation.
Yes. Yeah. The soothing ocean and basking in the sun, right?
That's it. I'm not even going to ask what the weather is actually like, because if it's raining, that would be fine.
Right. I'm not going to say it. It's a beautiful day here.
Awesome. That's awesome. So we met at, I was at a panel at, what was it? LA
Comic-Con
this time. Because I do a few local conventions. I do WonderCon and LA Comic-Con, and sometimes I do San Diego Comic-Con. And this time it was LA Comic-Con, and I invited you to be on the show because you have something unique.
Correct. Yeah, that's exactly how it went down. Actually, how it went down is I used my emotional support human to come and approach your guys' table when you were giving your presentation at one of the panels. And she, in turn, pitched out what we do here in Hawaii. So, yeah, that was the way that we got the invite. And we're really appreciative for the any kind of exposure. Because here in the islands, it's all about the coconut wilders, is what we call it. The coconut wilders is just word of mouth.
Nice. Yeah, I guess it would be. It's... Being as far from the mainland as you are, you're kind of disconnected in a lot of ways from the media stream that consumes all of this stuff.
Yeah, I think a lot of what people see or are exposed to what Hawaii looks like and how how it's interpreted is via the lens of like Hollywood, via the lens of whatever stories that are in movies, television that are brought to the islands. And I think a lot of it misses the mark as far as the authenticity of what Hawaii is all about and the people. I think a lot of the times that gets shuffled in the background, and the story kind of revolves somebody else's story, but Hawaii's in the back. So it's the whole idea with Mana Comics is basically stories, legends, and I do have superheroes and stories about history, stories about myths and legends of Hawaii. I have that all, and it's definitely, you get a taste of what real Hawaii is all about.
Well, the gamers have been using a Hawaiian word all along for magic. It's mana.
Yes.
And they have no idea that it is an island word.
That is true. Mana is such an important word here locally, and it's actually getting tossed around a lot more. If you follow, The Rock or even Jason Momoa, they tend to use the word mana. And basically what mana is actually the inner power of someone, all that, spirit of someone. And it's not just resides in people, it resides in the land. So it's definitely that inner power that's invisible but exists. And that's the best way I can describe it. It's that you know, that energy of someone, energy of the island, energy of the ocean, all has to do with just all that power coming out. And the word monocomics is, like I said, it's an important word, and you do see it quite often here, and you do hear it a lot more thanks to the local boys, Jason and The Rock.
I've read 1.5 of the comics, mm-hmm. Wow, my levels have gone down again. I've got to keep checking that. Yeah, there we go. I've read 1.5 of the comics, and I'm about halfway through Sista Shark.
Right.
And
right.
I love that story. I'm just having so much fun reading it. You know, she's got an ancestral connection to the ancient gods of Hawaii.
Yes, and I love it.
And she herself cannot swim, yet she's a shark god.
You know, that's the trick as a comic book creator, is coming up inventive ways to make your characters interesting. And I think I've learned that a while back. I mean, you look at the history of comics itself and what, you know, the creations of these heroes that were made, it's always that weaknesses that make it interesting. If you start to stack on somebody, when I say stack is when you start to add a whole bunch of things you don't even consider mm-hmm. a weakness, a tendency to what occurs is that your character will get boring fast because you already know the outcome. But when you throw a curveball in the mix for Sista Shark, when she's reverted into her human form, she has this intense phobia or fear of, you know, swimming in the open water. So she loses it. So, and when I tell that to people about the character, they're like, yeah, that is different. Yeah, instead of having a, you know, a woman version of Aquaman, you have you have someone that can totally kick Okoye, and now he's like totally like, okay, now she's a wreck because this happens to her. So
right, she can be startled out of her shark form, and if her opponent manages to do that, she's toast.
Exactly. That's it. Great. Exactly. It. So it's an origin story for Sista Shark. That series actually recently caught the attention of Gail Simone on there was mm-hmm. like a MauiCon was here. I wasn't unable to attend because I had to go to work, unfortunately. But she was given the Sista Shark trade back, and she absolutely loved it. And she posted on X, formerly Twitter, she said, I would love to write a Sista Shark. So I'm like, yeah, anytime you want to play in the sandbox of a Sista Shark, because she's like a monocomics version of our Wonder Woman, our top.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We know who she is. I've been following yes. her on Facebook lately, and she's yes. all about the Maui Comic Con. She had such a good time.
Oh, Gail Simone, you mean? Yeah. Yeah.
No, Sista Shark. She couldn't say enough. You know, kept me away from the water. I was good. No, I'm kidding.
Right? For me, it really was. Actually, Sista Shark, you know, initially was going to be like a male character, but I just wanted a different spin, and I think it was a successful version, because with Amakua, the word meaning like guardians, the guardians of Hawaii, Sista Shark is a part of that team, but she got popular, and I noticed like at the local conventions people started to dress up like her, and I'm like, wait a second, something's catching on with her.
Oh, that's so awesome. You know you've made it when they cosplay your characters.
Yeah,
exactly it. So what prompted me to do a solo was that that idea. It's like, you know what? This is meaningful to somebody, because you don't get enough of, especially, you know, people from Hawaii, you don't get enough representation, excuse me, for, you know, what the local people are all about. And I think a local girl like Sista Shark, Lani Castillo, is her real name. She definitely represents every local girl here. And to have someone that, you know, that talks like them, that looks like them. I think a lot of the girls were just really excited when she came out, and I just went for it with her.
I think it's awesome that your characters are not just, you know, with
the real people with real uh-huh. issues. This is like the classic Stan Lee theory of how to create a superhero. You know, he came out with Spider-Man, who was like a regular kid who had regular teenage problems, but also a superhero who had to be, you know, do his homework, you know?
And I guess that's it comes down to, like a grassroots kind of a thing, because when you look at the DC comics, it was always like the iconic godlike legends. And then when you had the Avengers, you know, with Stan Lee and mixing it all up with those kind of characters, there really were, like, I like the term underdog because, mm-hmm. you know, Hawaii is yeah. underdog. Uh-huh. We are underdog in every aspect out there with, you know, in, you know, in sports or just in general. And I always like characters that, you know, they have all these issues and problems and yet, and, you know, they're still willing to just try to go for it and make it happen. So Sister Shark is that underdog character that I absolutely love and represents so much people. And it just brings out a lot of good in terms of the local people's having people to root for. And there's not enough of that. So, yeah, that's why I love her.
Well, and the other thing is that the Hawaiian culture is frequently just used as a backdrop, you know,
yes.
or just something that you could drop in. And it wouldn't change the story if you removed it and set it in France or something.
You can just scratch the background like a roll, you know, those paint ones that you can just roll away.
Uh-huh.
That's exactly what it is. And it's really Hawaii in general, the islands are just an untapped resources and stories and myths and legends and the people, because the people is what makes Hawaii, Hawaii. You have like, we call that melting pot. We call it a mixed plate. Mixed plates are like different variety of foods on one plate. So we call our people like a mixed plate because like for me, I'm a product of plantation. What that means is, you know, a certain time in the, you know, the early days of Hawaii, you know, when sugarcane and pineapple was a big thing here, all these different ethnicities came here to make a go of it, right? They were promised, like, you know, here's land and you can work, you know, on the sugar and the pineapple. So you got all these people, Portuguese included, and Puerto Ricans, Filipino, Japanese, Chinese, Filipino, Samoan, they all came here. So I recognize that I'm a mixed plate in itself. And there's so much different races here. And it's so interesting to learn the different cultures and how people act and their traditions. And to be able to show that on a scale with a comic book, it really is. I didn't consider it at the time, but it's, you're really showing it and sharing it to the world. And that's something special, which I didn't consider when I first did my first issue. First issue of Amaku was basically, okay, bucket list. I'm going to throw this out there because I always wanted to see my local superhero team. And I'm scratching it off and I'm done. I'm walking away. That's what I thought it would be.
They've taken on a life of their own. Tell us about the characters. Tell us about the characters, the people. So, one for each island, isn't it? Or one for each major island.
You know, it's basically, yeah, where there's a cast of it. You'll see them behind me and stuff, but look at me do my bob and weaves. Yeah. But, yeah, they're typical, like, local people. You know, what if local people on the islands had powers? So you have, like, right on my right, you have this big guy. Polynesian guys, especially Samoans, they're known for their size and super size sole. Sole is a word that's used here in Hawaii and, you know, in Samoa. It's basically you're saying you're like a Samoan guy. Sole. But people read it, they super size sole. No, it's not like a foot thing. It's so there's terminologies that I use that are locally used so that people can understand. Portuguese man of war is kind of like the Iron Man of the group. And what's interesting is Portuguese, like me, I'm a quarter, there's a long running history of it. It's Portuguese are kind of like the blondes of the islands. They're always considered not the swiftest and smartest. And I used to have to endure a lot of Portuguese jokes when I was growing up. And, you know, when I created this character, I said, you know what? It's time that I'm going to create, this is my universe. I'm going to make the Portuguese guy the smartest guy on the team. So that's what he is.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, he saw Sister Sakura, what we talked about. Royal Hawaiian Guard, he actually was been around a long time in Hawaii, and he was there for the time where the overthrow happened back, you know, in the 1800s.
I don't mean to you know, launch a gotcha question on you, but that's really a colonial image, and mm-hmm. it's a very harsh history. How do you justify him as being a good guy?
You know, there was a time where, you know, we had to adapt, you know, in the ways of the Western culture. So the dress and stuff wasn't a matter of just how it was. It wasn't like we remained in our, you know, on our traditional clothes of, you know, malus and, you know, skirts and stuff. It was, we had a Royal Hawaiian Guards that they were there to protect the queen at that time. Unfortunately, during that overthrow, it was like, it basically was a land grab, and they used a campaign of, even like what, you know, you think cancel culture was is new. They were doing that back then, and they did it to the queen, just drumming her up like she's an evil dictator. And then they eventually took, you know, took guns away from the people. And then the guards still had weapons, but then they used the people that overthrew was like a bunch of businessmen got together. Hey, let's take it now. So Roy Hoang Guard was somebody that was there during that time and was supposed to be the one also to watch the queen and those type of events. But unfortunately, in the comic series number two, which I didn't let you guys see, but it kind of explains a little bit of what occurred during that time. So, yeah, I understand what you're saying about the dress and mannerism and how it can get away with that. We still have Royal Hawaiian Guards here today, and they'll do like presentations at Iolani Palace, which is the palace right behind where the queen used to stay.
Gosh. So he's like 200 years old or something.
Way older than that. He was around since the old natives of yesteryear too. So that's him. He's like their mentor. He's like their, we call him Kumu's, like their teacher. And right above him is Phantom Surfer. He's kind of like the guy that comes in at the last second for the clutch play or something. He's the guy that will help them out if they need it. And he's kind of tethered to the team. Not really a member, but he's tethered. Gecko Man is kind of like that, our version of like a Spider-Man type of guy. Can compare it to other characters. He would be that guy, you know, using humor as a form of coping skills. Soul Hot, I wanted to have an Asian character represented. Japanese and Chinese are huge, but also Koreans. She is Korean, so I wanted to make a Korean character that was feisty, fiery, and that was her.
She's got the flaming pigtails. Yeah, going on.
Yes, she's got that flaming.
Well, and she is, you know, there's no mistaking she's Korean. The flag
there's
is
no
on her.
There's no mistaking the flag uniform. Right there. She's representing. Mighty Moke is basically my Moke. The word term Moke is like a terminology locals pigeon that we use for someone who's tough and rugged. Normally from like. I live in Oahu, so that would be like a west side of the island. That would be kind of a rougher and rugged guy. And he is definitely as close to powerful almost to like Superman. He's a young guy that got a bunch of powers similar to Superman. However, he's more irresponsible, so he's just trying to figure it out. And that's what the teachers are for. And in Hawaiian culture, the Kumu was always that one guiding. And so Roy Hoang Guard is that guy. This is a young team, and he's there as their mentor, trying to get him through to defend the islands.
You know, Mighty Moke is he's just 16 years old, right? He's really kind of a kid, and he's been handed this necklace or medallion that has been worn by his ancestors going back generations. And his uncle is not happy with how he deals with his responsibilities at all.
And that's really reflective of you know, the culture here. It's you have to have that respect. There's a total respect, you know, in different cultures and stuff. In Hawaii, you're always respecting the elders because the elders were always the ones that were the teachers. You know, as far as like this dates back way back in the villages of old, they were the ones that were teaching you, you know, how to fish, how to, you know, how to build things. Those, all those responsibilities, they were revered as someone who knew something and they were experts at it. So Kumu is the teacher and that he's their Kumu as far as guiding them. It's like, this is how we're going to do it. And this is how we're going to defend.
So how long ago did you start Mana Comics? When was the genesis?
Okay. So the very beginning, we're going to be 10 years in 2024 next year in September. Yeah. So 2014 is when I first said, you know, if I don't do it now, it's never going to happen. And this has been an ongoing thing since I was a kid, hoping, waiting the day that I could see like someone do like a superhero from Hawaii. I just wanted to see it. You know, I just thought that would be a fascinating idea. So like you, I'm sure I was always watching those Saturday morning cartoons and watching Super Friends, and I was always excited when those background more characters, you know, like Samurai, Apache Chief, those type of guys stepping forward and say, hey, this is cool. You know, it's not it's different from what you were seeing. I was like, oh, no, I'm waiting for that guy from Hawaii. Where's he going to show up? Never happened. Marvel Comics and DC Comics never happened as a kid, but although I do see recently they are making strides to pull in representations, and I think you don't really have to just change out someone's costume, though. There's really some history that it can be a way to integrate someone and making fresh, you know, a fresh idea off it. And like I said, Hawaii is just an untapped resource of just all these stories and things and cultures and legends that you can really just, you know, show a part of, you know, who these, you know, who the people are here.
It's every bit as legit as going to, you know, the Norse gods and whatever for their legends. Why not? Why not the islands?
Exactly. Exactly. And the most famous god that we have her, we just did a comic of her, is Pele. Now, if you know who Pele is, she's our fire goddess. And unlike a lot of the gods of yesteryear, either, you know, from Greek or Norse mythology, she still exists, you know, in stories to this day. So you'll hear stories about, you know, her hitchhiking with, you know, individuals in their car, her being seen within the lava. So her
stories
are
very much active.
Do not
take a lava. Don't take a piece of lava home. Don't ever do that.
Exactly. Yes.
She will beat your butt.
Yes. The national park on the Big Island, Kilauea, the park rangers will always say they will receive these rocks in the mail, come back to them and say, sorry, I just want to turn this back. I know I was not supposed to take this. And basically what you're taking when you take, you know, these lava rocks, you're taking a piece of Pele away from her home. That's her home. So a lot of that, and like I said, a lot of that mana, a lot of that energy from that stuff, it can be a not a good thing to be bringing back into you, because it's not I don't want to say the word curse, but it's kapu. Don't do it.
Yeah. Wow. It's just so much fun. I mean, as I've only read, as I said, I've only read one and a half of the comics so far. I'm embarrassed to say, but I do love what I'm reading.
The art style is great. The action is punchy. The writing is right there.
The characters are all solid. I mean, there's nobody there feels two-dimensional.
I think that's what I really wanted to reflect. I really wanted to show that, you know, the variety of people that we have here, and that everyone has different levels. You will hear, like, people here, even locally, some people will talk pidgin. So in my books, I have, like, a pidgin to English on the back of, like, the very inner back cover.
Thank you for that.
If you're not, yeah, right? I didn't think of that like on my own. It took my letter to say, Chris, I'm not too sure if everyone's going to catch on that. I don't want you to lose your audience. Maybe you should include that. I was like, you know, you're right. And when I actually kickstarted that first Amakua series, that's exactly what I did. And I thought it was just going to be local people backing it, but it was people from like all ends of the United States, like Maryland, Texas, Pittsburgh. And I was like, what? These people are backing it. You know, I think it's because Hawaii has this reputation of all the, it just kind of puts you in a good mood. When you talk about, when you say you're from Hawaii, people kind of tend to relax and think, oh yeah, that sounds great. Or, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's that, I think that feeling. So people are willing to I think, oh, this is interesting. Let's see what he does. I want to see what he does with characters and superheroes are from Hawaii. So I think, you know, we are at an advantage, kids. We kind of caught that niche where you don't really see something like that. And then you get to get exposed to these characters, and they're using phrases kind of like, almost like X-Men. When you hear like, Colossus, you know, do some Russian, or, you know, my Samoan character adds a little bit of phrases, my Portuguese character adding a little bit of Portuguese in there. So, and then I love that kind of stuff when I read books, because I'm like, what did he say? And if you don't have like a little thing that says it, then I'll look it up. So, okay, that's what he said. All right.
Of course, the danger there, which you obviously figured out, was that if you don't have some kind of a translation, or you lose too much of it, you can't tell what the characters are saying.
Exactly.
That happens in real life. No footnotes, right? When you're talking to a guy from New Orleans, okay?
Oh, yes. I would imagine that. That's exactly it. Pidgin can get in different degrees, and it can get different degrees of stronger and thicker. And, yeah, so if you actually seen, I don't know if you ever watched Dog the Bounty Hunter.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, they have, like, subtitles on the bottom when the local guy is presented and he's talking, and you're like, okay, that's what he's saying. So, and it's definitely helpful because my characters, some of them, they do speak a thicker form of pidgin. However, you don't want it to get lost in translation as you're trying to push a story along. But I just wanted to keep it unique. I didn't want to water it down, which I feel like Hollywood tends to do They say, let's sound, make it sound more. No, I want to teach how they would say it legitimately and authentically as possible, so we can share the culture, and then they can in turn learn. And that's important to me. And honestly, I think you see it kind of. And this once again, it goes back to sharing it, because you got people like, you know, you got people like The Rock and Momoa who are talking like that and sharing these words and terms, and people are learning it. So, no, I think it's fantastic. I'm just blessed to do something that as a kid I always wanted to see it, and when DC or Marvel didn't do it, it eventually just got to a point, you know, I had to just do it myself.
Yeah, you could just give up waiting and jump in. I mean, that's how an awful lot of artists and musicians and writers get to be in the places they are. They get tired of waiting for somebody to do the things they want, so they make it themselves.
No, that's exactly in that spirit, you know, and you know, it really was actually, it was me as the kid, like I said, wanting to see it, but then it was me not realizing what was happening when I would, like, when I was in elementary school, I'd be like, I was the quiet kid, the chubby kid in the corner, just keeping to myself, doodling on the page, and I learned that if I drew my classmates as superheroes, which I would kind of be doing, it would kind of be like an icebreaker for me, you know, and I thought that, you know, hey, this is bringing people in and they're getting excited, like, oh, what's happening? Oh, you're drawing me? Oh, that's cool. Or, you know, but I didn't realize at that time, too. I was kind of like laying that foundation. What would be later Bona Comics is all these diverse people on the playground, which was everybody in Hawaii, you know, like how he said, Chinese, Filipino, Japanese, Hawaiian, Portuguese, Samoan, we're all playing together on the playground. So That's what it was. I mean, that was the foundation that I was doing. I didn't realize it, but I did it. And
so are you the lead artist?
I did a lot of the Amakua, but now I'm just doing the Stan Lee and kind of just having to stir pots and to keep it going. So yeah, I honestly give all credit to the artists that have stepped up, and there's, you know, Hawaii is challenging to do like this kind of work only. We all have like day jobs. Mm-hmm. Well, thankfully I'm retiring from my day job, but we all have day jobs, and they, you know, keeps them very busy. So, you know, doing a comic, one comic or two comics, it's just stressful to do deadlines.
It's a huge job.
Oh, it's a task. I don't think people realize it. So when I tell them, like, if I did this all by myself, it'd take maybe two, 3 years. They're like, what? I say, yeah, dude, it's that much. It's that intense of what you're trying to accomplish. I mean, you can do it, you know, half a cole, but it's not going to be the same. So I try to bring, you know, these local artists in, and we've done, I think we have to like 16 different, you know, books altogether right about now.
So I saw the Mana Legends. It looks really interesting. You had,
yes,
you know, King Kamehameha as, yeah, there we are. And,
yes,
you know, teaching history. This is like going back to the Classics Illustrated, only it's Hawaiian.
Yes. You know, and, when I would go to these conventions, I'd have people come up to me and they'd look around my table and they said, do you have anything like relevant to, like, you know, history? Because I really want to teach my kids in a way. I was like, you know what? That's the one thing that we're missing. And in my head, I didn't think Kamehameha right away, because our community is such that, you know, the Hawaiian community, I'm a quarter Hawaiian. So the importance of getting a story right when you're talking about an iconic character, either it being Kamehameha, total iconic character of the islands, king that united the islands, or even Pele, the fire goddess. These are very just revered, and you want to make it right. So my artist that I actually pulled for Kamehameha, he is like 75% Hawaiian, and he was like, I don't know if we should do this either, because we're probably going to get flack, because people tend to get really sensitive about if you don't do your due diligence when you're creating a story about you know, such characters. It took like, okay, so we kind of just, okay, let's think about it. And I got a call out of the blue from the Kamehameha Schools, and they didn't know what I was going to be thinking about doing. Kamehameha Schools is you know, it's a private school, and they teach, you know, Native Hawaiians and different degrees of percentages and stuff, but and they wanted me to take an intern for Mana Comics. And I was like, you know, I think this is a sign that I should be doing something, to perpetuate and share the culture now. And so I took this intern on and, you know, guided her through what I did. And and as far as like art and writing and stuff. And towards the end of our time together, I said, hey, why don't you try draw King Kamehameha? She said, fine, that's great. So she did it. Beautiful job. And I didn't tell her. I says, you know what? I'm going to kickstart Kamehameha, and I want to use your cover as the cover. They also gave me another intern, and because I suggested, hey, why don't we do one in just Hawaiian? So it was just like all these little events that occurred that I knew it was right, and I knew that it was done in a way that my motives are pure. I wanted to share the story, you know, and it, granted, it's comic book, it's, you know, but it really captures the imagination of like a kid from Hawaii who, you know, he's not going to open up a textbook, but open up a comic and absorbing it that way.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. As a kid, I would absolutely love that.
And you've got it flipped like an ace double novel. It's one yes. side's English, one side's in Hawaiian.
Yep. Flip it, and you got both versions. So
you can actually learn some Hawaiian if you don't speak it from the comic.
That's exactly awesome. It. So I was absolutely humbled by the opportunity Kamehameha gave to take on an intern. They gave me like a translator to help one of the students. So that's two students, one help with marketing, and we did the Kickstarter and was just hugely successful on that aspect. And it's still loved. I mean, I plan to do more of this series because we definitely have a lot of more Kamehameha stories, not just Kamehameha, but there's tons of like different stories about chiefs, battles, a whole bunch of other things, a whole bunch of Hawaiian gods. There's just so much to draw from, but as anything else, it's time and money. But I really want to focus more on that too, that history, legend, myth kind of thing too, not just my superheroes, which I adore, but also knowing that I want to perpetuate the culture and make it relevant to kids now, because the competition with even reading is you got the flip, you know, the phone, you're battling with iPads. So let's make something interesting that they're going to be excited about.
Do you have ebook editions of the graphic novels?
I'm going to try to do that next month.
Okay.
In January, because like I said, I told you, I'm going to retire. So I'll have more time to figure out to do things. So I have to figure out how to do that. But once I do, it's going up.
That's awesome.
So what's next? What's next for the Guardians and Mana Comics in general?
Well, I'm going to continue the Mana Legends series. Up next is a story about it's a story about an autistic kid. And this autistic kid is from a line of kahunas. Now, kahunas, traditionally, like, they are chanters. They chant the Hawaiian language in a way that, you know, like I was talking about mana, words mean so much in Hawaiian because Hawaiian wasn't a written language, so all the power was put into the words. So this autistic girl, unfortunately, she's nonverbal too. So now she has to figure out a way to be a part of this line of chanters. But you know, she's feeling like she's kind of being cast aside. But she has to step forward in her own right and make a hero's journey to discover that she actually has that power in her, and she can help defend Hawaii and against supernatural. So that one's gonna be a real big one. I don't know if anyone's autistic in your family. I've got two kids that are on the spectrum. When I say spectrum, autism isn't just like a cookie cutter thing. Mm-hmm. It's mm-hmm. a degree, right?
Oh yeah.
And right. So I'm not by all means a professional. I can only speak as a parent. But I want two kids to have someone too, especially local over here, to also know like you can do it, you can push through it, you got, you know, there's so much problems that could be, you know, put in your way and challenges, but you can face them. And I wanted them to have that representation too and say, hey, I can be a hero too, you know. And so that one is a really important book for me. That one's called Chanter. It's going to be within the next, I would say, 3 to 4 months that we'll get it done. So awesome. that's a big one.
Wow, that sounds great.
It's a fun story. It's gonna be a good thing, and I'm hoping, like I said, in 3 to 4 months. There's actually, this is the year of making like local girls. I'm also doing another story with three local girls. Just, I don't know. This is the year for it. They in the daytime they run a food truck making mixed plates and all kinds of local food, and then at night, they actually are kind of like the Ghostbusters. They go and fight the Hawaii supernatural, which there's a ton of here. So And that one is going to be a good fun book. We already started on that one too. It's probably going to be more towards the end of 2024. But
I love that idea.
Yeah,
who's going to notice if there's a food truck around?
Yes,
you like bust some ghosts and then have a you go have a loco moco. I think that's awesome.
See, exactly. That's exactly it. So yeah, we're going to have fun with that one. And I'm all about local food too. So look, I'm all about local food and Hawaii Supernatural. So this is right up my wheelhouse. I'm all down this particular book. So it's going to be a fun book. It's like kind of like a Scooby-Doo, but you don't just pull off masks. It's the real deal here, folks. You know, like the different haunts that we have in Hawaii is really reflective of all the different cultures that came here. So, you know, you got Japanese haunts, you got Filipino haunts, you got Hawaiian haunts, obviously. Night marches is a huge thing here. And so you have all this degree of like I was saying, plantation. All the people that came here, they didn't just bring their local foods and different things. They brought their haunts with them. So you got this band of a trio of girls, Charlie's Angels, whatever you want to call them. They're out there, you know, serving good food and at night, you know, kicking okole. So I'm excited about that one. I really am. That's going to be a fun one.
How far back does Hawaiian mythology go?
How many centuries and millennia? Okay.
Are we talking thousands?
We're talking thousands.
Yeah, you're talking thousands of years. You know. And you know, it's not like the Kamehameha stories, which is, you know, the 1800s. It goes back further. Is the mic?
No, he's talking. She's talking.
Okay, quick break. His mic's not actually working. I'm only hearing
him
through my mic.
Actually.
Oh, perfect.
I think the supernatural's kicking in.
The haunts are getting us. We may have to wrap this up because I think we've mostly, you know, otherwise we're just going to repeat ourselves on how awesome these books are.
Because they are. They are. Yeah, I'm going to have to move over to her microphone.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, that's so much better.
Wow.
I was really pleased to meet you both at LA Comic Con. Yes. And I was surprised that you had come all the way out to Los Angeles for this. But yes. I guess you needed to. You know, you've got something wonderful that needed to be shared.
Most definitely. And I do appreciate that because what you guys had up at that panel was very relevant to what we're trying to do. We're just looking to expand. And like I said, we don't have the marketing genius skills at the moment, however, but we do, like I said, word of mouth is always important. And having said in the panel was really good information for us. So thank you for that.
Well, we are happy to clap our coconuts and beat the drums and the logs,
coconuts.
Come back anytime.
Well, we do appreciate you. Thank you so much for the opportunity to share, what the comics are like here in Hawaii.
And when it comes time to do a Kickstarter, I hope you'll think of us and ask to be on the show again.
Fantastic. We'll do that.
It would be awesome to have you.
We can all have locomocos together. How about that?
That sounds great. Yeah, thank you for joining us.
I've
been listening to The Event Horizon here on sci-fi.radio. Our guest has been Chris Caravallo, the driving force behind Mana Comics in Hawaii. Thank you for joining us. It's been great having you.
Mahalo. Thank you so much.
You have been listening to episode 268 of Sci-Fi.Radio's production of The Event Horizon for December 16th, 2023. Our guest this evening has been Chris Caravallo of Mana Comics, a Hawaiian comic book publisher. For more about Mana Comics and the titles they publish, visit manacomics.com. This show will air again tomorrow, December 17th at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, and again on the upcoming Thursday and Saturday mornings at 4 a.m. Pacific, 7 a.m. Eastern. After all of the airtimes have passed, you will find this episode and others on iTunes, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and on our own website at sci-fi.radio. If you enjoyed the programming you have just heard, please consider visiting patreon.com/sci-fi radio and become a patron of the station. We are listener-supported sci-fi and fantasy fandom radio, and your contributions go to paying our DJs, our production team, the writers for our Geek News website, our business operation fees, our music licensing, and a lot more, and they help us procure and maintain the equipment and other resources we need to stay on the air. We have been broadcasting continuously since 2009, and we are thankful for the support of listeners just like you. That URL again is patreon.com/sci-fi radio.
The Event Horizon on Sci-Fi.Radio. It's sci-fi for your Wi-Fi.